Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Rabbit Hole Roundtable Talks, the show where we take a topic and we deep dive into it. Today, I'm joined by my co-host as usual, Mino, and a very special guest. Mino, you can introduce him.
Hello, 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 everybody. All right. Anyway, as you know, my name is Mino. Welcome to the show. Today we have a special guest, Babo. He's a long friend of mine, one of the best. He's half black, half Hispanic, half human, and half amazing. You know what I'm saying? And all those halves. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. But yo, yeah, we knew him from undergrad. And he's been friends with us since, actually, he's been friends with me since elementary school. So, anything else you want to add?
Probably missed the Ara part, but I think I good.
Oh yeah, and he's often mistaken as Arab.
He's Well, Bebo, Fonzo, you can introduce yourself. Tell us about you.
I really hope all my professional partners don't find that introduction anytime soon. But yes, thank you for the introduction, guys. I'm really happy to be here. Name is Babo, but professionally known as Alfonso Rodriguez, and I am the operating manager of Accelerate BI, which is a tech accelerator from the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's actually the first tech accelerator from the U.S. Virgin Islands. There have been many sort of business assistance, business accelerator programs in the VI, but I'm sort of managing the first one that only works with technology companies and technology-enabled companies.
Nice.
I don't know if you guys want me to talk a little bit more about the program or any questions you guys
No,
have.
no, no. So normally for our show, we go through the topics that we discussed off screen. And Alfonso did like a so Babo used like a basically like a outline format. So I thought it would be interesting if we all kind of did who am I, what it's like to be whatever we are kind of thing. Since since we were technically all supposed to answer all the questions.
You want to go?
Sure, I guess. Hi, my name is Mino, or I've lately been going by MK47 because people can't pronounce Mino when they see it on screen for some reason. I'm an epidemiologist. I work for the military and I try to help soldiers stay alive and stay in the military for as long as possible by taking care of their health.
Nice. I am wanted, also known as Silence, and I work for the government here as well. I work for the city, and I mostly work with streets and drainage and things like that and try to keep the city running behind the scenes. But I'm truly a marine biologist. I'm just trying to find my way to get there one of these days.
Nice. So, Alfonso, damn it, I keep using your real name. I know we're supposed to use our like gamer tags slash nicknames, but
That's fine.
so you
I keep.
talked in your notes, you have talking about economic development and venture capitalism. What's the difference between those?
Well, I think the sort of two strands of what I do. So I know I said I'm the operating manager of Accelerate BI program. That's sort of one of the facets of my job. I am the entrepreneurship manager at the UVI Research and Technology Park. So that's economic development organization. And what the RT Park does specifically is it works on technology enabled initiatives for economic development, primarily business attraction. You guys probably noticed from being from the islands, but a big part of the VI economy outside of like tourism and the stuff that we know is trying to attract companies to come down to the VI. So I know the local EDA through their EDC program, they do that. My career originally stemmed from an EDC company where I worked for about like 10 years consulting. But the RT Park in itself, it's another economic development organization in the Virgin Islands. It was made by legislature. So around like early 2000s, the legislature sort of put it on paper and made it like a legal program. And what they do is business attract tech or tech-enabled companies. From that, there's a lot of programs that come from it, STEM education, workforce development, and obviously programming. I'm the manager for that, and I work, you know, with anything regarding entrepreneurial and workforce development. As it relates to venture capitalism, and one of the reasons I added the note, I think when I talk about my program and I talk about what's the difference between like venture investing versus like regular investing, I think people know regular investing, like you invest in a stock or a commodity, you know, you get your Robinhood app, you're looking at, you know, whether they're going up and down, your stocks and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That I think is well understood. Something that people are maybe a little bit unfamiliar or don't know for the average sort of layperson would be venture capitalism, which is when folks sort of invest in early stage companies. A lot of times, tech startups, their early investment comes from like family or just their network. So one of the reasons why we thought it'd be a really good idea to sort of create an accelerator VI, tech accelerator program, accelerator VI here in the VI, is to sort of create a conduit for local companies to have access to that investment. It's the VI. There's not really that, you could say, like ecosystem of tech entrepreneurship. We're trying to build it, but it has been so far great over the last like 21 companies we've worked with, where we've created them and given them a platform to find folks in the community that have the funds to be able to invest to actually take chances in their company. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of what venture capitalism is. It's sort of like putting your money in early stage companies. And there are a lot of people that are doing that in tech. You know, most famously, you know, like Zuckerberg, when he did Facebook, there was a lot of folks that sort of bought in and invested in that. And it probably has the potential for bigger returns on your usual regular stock commodity. Because if you invest in a company that, you know, early on, it's just some kids building an app, but then that becomes a unicorn. It's evaluated at $1 billion. Now your $20,000 to $100,000 investment just, you know, it just blew up to the sky. And now, you know, you're owning, you know, some type of stock in a company that's evaluated, you know, in the billions and millions.
Cool. So how did you find yourself where you are right now? What steps did you have to take, and what was your background to be accepted?
So, like I said before, so I initially, before joining the RT part, I sort of had about a decade's worth career in healthcare consulting. I got into that right after I finished college, UVI. Mm-hmm. It's a decade's worth of healthcare consulting, but you know, you break it down like the typical career. You come in as an analyst, early person, you know, you work your way up to the corporate ladder. At around like year five, year six, I had already sort of getting myself PMP certified, process improvement certified, Lean Six Sigma. At that point, you know, I became a full-blown manager, had a portfolio of companies that I was working with, had analysts and admins under me, and, you know, was managing a pretty hectic career around healthcare consulting. And it was specifically around operational excellence. So that's basically you go into a place, you figure out where there may be some inefficiencies or misgivings with the operations, and you try to apply the skills and stuff that you learn. A lot of times it can be very stock tools, it can be very simple stuff like helping people, you know, use new technologies for whatever processes they're using. I mean, that's something that happens even in the public space. I can't tell you many times here where I've seen here publicly people still using like actual filing systems, like legitimate like paper and document, in a world where we could just build websites and have Word documents. Yeah. So, you know, it could be simple as that, or it could be something as complicated as, you know, erecting a new hospital, creating a whole new pharmacy, retail pharmacy within a hospital. So, you know, I sort of had the gamut in that experience for what I call new business opportunities in the for-profit healthcare side. I left that place when the hurricanes hit the VA. So that was like around 2017. Mm-hmm. You know, things went, you know, belly up in the VA, decided to move back to St. Croix, bought a home, sort of took a year off, figured out some stuff personally. And then there was this really unique opportunity with the RT part. I really took it for the accelerator program. Like, I knew I had to do all these other stuff, but knowing that I'll be able to work in a program where we'll be helping startups and sort of work in tech entrepreneurship, because it's something I sort of had an interest on, sort of working as something on the side outside of work. You know, it's a project that I've had for a few years now. But I think it was a really great opportunity for me to sort of bring my skills from a corporate operations, business finance side into the program. And though I'm the operating manager, so I deal with more with like the day-to-day, a lot of the logisticals and stuff, I am sort of a content expert. And we have a few other managers that, you know, they themselves have gone through programs, they themselves have had their own tech companies. They've gone through like programs like Y Combinator, 500 Startups, where these big state-sized tech accelerator programs. So we have a few folks that are really knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a small team. It's like three of us. But we try our best to sort of walk with, you know, with the local entrepreneurs and people that you know, want to try that.
Cool.
Wow. That's fucking impressive, dude. I kind of want to come down and get involved in the tech industry in the islands because, you know, when I think about back home, I don't often think about technology. I often think about like, we should do agriculture or we should do tourism. But I think exploring this new avenue would be great, especially if we can get enough educated locals to get into the tech industry. Because, you know, back in the day, we pushed a lot of STEM. And it's great to push STEM and all, but not very useful if people aren't reinvesting that knowledge into something. And I think tech could be a nice door or entryway into people reinvesting back into the island, potentially. So, awesome.
I would add, Fionn, I know you mentioned like agriculture and tourism. Tech basically enables anything. So there's a lot of talk now about like sustainable agriculture and how do we bring in technology into agriculture. So I think there's a lot of stuff in the islands that needs sort of like a reimagining, like an update with new technology products and new technology solutions. It is difficult. You touched on it a little bit. When you work with, I would say like a workforce that may not be as exposed to technology and what technology can do, there is both a educational barrier, but there's a cultural barrier too. Like people do have sort of that like risk tolerance against technology solutions. So you sort of have to work both the educational side, but also the cultural side.
Yeah, you're right. I could tell you right now, I have family members who refuse to use technology. I don't want to like put anybody on the spot because they'll get upset, but I know people who don't book their own flights
because
you know what, let me just stop because I know they would know who they are and I don't want to get my
but there's people like that I know now, even like at work, that don't want to use cell phones, they don't want to use computers, they just want to do things the old school way. And it's like, it feels like Avatar the movie, where you bring in all these new things and the people are just stuck in their ways.
Yeah. I don't know it's what really it is. Like, even me, when I first moved to the States, like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to use anything. Like, oh, I'll just walk or I'll just take the bus or like Uber and all these things. When they first came out, I was like, why? Like, even all these apps nowadays to pay people, like Cash App and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the only reason I download them is after somebody's like, hey, do you have this? I can pay you right now. Or, hey, do you have this? Can you pay me? And I'm just like, what is that? Then I have to download it.
Yeah.
And like, send them stuff. So like, for instance, my brother and sister, they have Zelle. I didn't even know Zelle was a thing until like yesterday. So yeah, I just like, I'm even myself, I am technology averse. And you could even ask Wanted, like, whenever anything to do with computers or any technology, I'm always like, dude, can you help me? Because I do not know what the heck I'm doing.
Yeah,
I refuse to even Google how to do it myself, which is so stupid.
Nah, it's just as who you are. Some people are just that way. For me, I'm always been into technology, whether it's like the science technology, just learning about how things work. So if I have to do something, I'm going to Google it or YouTube it, figure it out, and then work from there. Most of what I know is self-taught with technology.
Wanted, how much of that do you see it in the public space? Because I work in both in public and private. Mm-hmm. I've seen that. Private, you have to sort of be up to date. But in the public space, you do encounter people that would have jobs for a long time, and they are just so behind technologically or to anything new. I don't know how much you see it because your states, I'm dealing with it in the island. I'm pretty sure you deal with it also in the states.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot of things that I do or questions that I ask and that's never been asked before. Like they want to talk about how to make things better. So I'm like, okay, do a PowerPoint. They're like, what's that? I was like, ain't no way. Yeah, so I had the idea to make a PowerPoint to teach them how to use computers the right way because they send all these videos and educational stuff for them to do, but they're not going to do it. They're not going to pay attention to the screen. They need somebody to actually teach them in front of their face.
Yeah, I actually did a class once about bridging the gap between boomers and zoomers. And they talked about that, like how some people, based on your generation, your learning style is different. Like, or even how you communicate. So like they were saying, like boomers more prefer to get on a phone and call somebody and talk to them about whatever. And then they were saying, like zoomers, they prefer like a text or like a short email message. And then you have the millennials in between both who are able or willing to do both things. They don't mind a text, they don't mind a phone call. And it was also the same for like how you educate. So I forgot specifically, and I don't want to like miss quote, but I think I remember hearing that boomers prefer someone teach them in person, like kind of what you were saying. And then Zoomers would prefer like a video, like a very short video, like no more than 30 minutes. And then millennials, of course, again, somewhere in between, they can do both. So it's very interesting because I know like governmental programs, everybody have this like joke, like the government is always behind and the government is like slow and all that kind of stuff. But I've been seeing a lot of like trying to advance technology. Like we've been talking about machine learning lately. We've been talking about cloud technologies and stuff like that. So even though they're slow, they at least are aware of the technologies that are available and they try to like gradually move towards incorporating it, at least on my end.
Yeah, I think it's about incentive. I think in a private sector, you're incentivized to change constantly because if you don't, you die. I mean, you lose your efficiency, you lose customers, you're not going to exist. In a public space, sometimes the incentives aren't there for change, so you have to sort of create it. And not I don't want to paint with a broad brush. I've interacted with different organizations, both publicly here in the VI, and some are very leading in the technology they use and sort of like the learnings and whatnot. But others and you typically find it in the more what I would say transactional areas. So like think of like the DMV or think of like the health department and stuff like that. Because of the transactional work, there's a lot of like face time that they have to do with public individuals or just here in the office doing these sort of very repeatable tasks. There just isn't time or an incentive to change. Just do it and try to do it as best as you can. So that's where you need leadership. That's where you need more guidance from the top to sort of have change. Because change ain't gonna happen. If I'm someone and my job is to be down at a DMV, tech picture, give you your information, I'm gonna do that for 20 years and I'm good. I have no incentive to change unless that's coming from the top, from management or some other area.
But isn't it also a gap in moving up? Because growing up, like at 5, 6 years old, I would go to McDonald's and there's somebody working at McDonald's, and I come back in high school and they're still working at McDonald's. It's like, wow! And the shirt's the same color. So it's like I don't think there's any way for them to move up in that position, you know?
You know what's funny? Wait, before you answer, Bebo, you know what's funny? Lately, I've been seeing these commercials where it's like you can start working at whatever random fast food place and you can work your way up to becoming an owner. I'm like, that's not how real life works. Why are they lying?
Well, one that I've actually seen that, and I think that's you guys notice how with COVID, jobs, especially in like the food area. So for any restaurant, any food handler, it's been really rough trying to get employees. So they're gonna lie through their teeth. They're gonna give you cell phone with shitty plan and all this new incentives to sort of get you in. But to your question, Kurt, yes, I would say that depending on the culture, and a lot of when I reference culture, I'm meaning the VI. There have been these areas, whether it's in the public or jobs, like very retail jobs where people sort of get in there and feel like they're stuck. I think that has to do a lot where they are. So if you're in the VI, mobility upwards is very difficult. It's very difficult in whatever sector area you're in. In the public sector, I would say that it it is just as difficult as someone like the lady. I remember this one lady in Lorraine, McDonald's. I'm pretty sure she worked there all the way when I went Alfredo, Woodson, Complex, Big UVI. I'm pretty sure that lady was in that McDonald's for at least 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that entrenchment sort of in other places where I'm pretty sure there was a lady at the DMV for like 10 plus years. Same spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just becomes a job. And at that point, that person sort of has sort of like a responsibility to the family, and they're just going to do their job. You can't really fault them for all the mm-hmm. other social and difficult issues that you as a customer going to the DMV will have. It's not their fault. It's a fault of bigger forces at play that just haven't sort of helped that individual.
I feel like our generation is the one that's more so on the side of, we're going to do something that we actually enjoy, or find a job where we can actually move, even if it's just laterally, just to have a change of pace, you know?
Yeah, yep. You can see it on a resume. So a lot of people, so getting to the point now where you know, you become a hiring manager and you see people's resumes, older individuals that I've interacted with, you see these sort of like, they were at a place for like 10, 5 years, and then they were at the next place for 15 years. And that's a resume. They've got like two spots, 25 years of experience in that. Impressive resume. Working out professionally with people more my contemporary, my age, when I see the resumes, it's like a year here, 2 years here, 3 years here.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I feel somewhat of a boomer being that I did healthcare consulting for 10 years in the same organization.
Mm-hmm.
That, a lot of people tell me that's weird. That's rare. Yeah. You have a lot of mobility. So, it is sort of like a new thing that our generation is more willing to just do the lateral shift, even if it's not, you know, a bump in pay, or, you know, it gives you no outside benefit. If it's a different job, we're more willing to take it.
Yeah. So I've heard this, and I believe it to be true, at least in the States. I don't know about the islands, but like, when you're trying to like get more money, I've heard like this generation, our generation, part of the reason why we move around so much is because the pay isn't as good when you first start. And the best way to get like a raise is to just work somewhere else and just try and get them to pay you more money instead,
mm-hmm.
which I find to be very inefficient because, for one, I feel kind of like annoyed that companies don't just pay people well and then give them substantial raises throughout the years if they are doing a good job, instead of losing that employee to another company who's going to pay them more, and then having to basically lose all that experience, all that knowledge. Like they lose so much compared to what they would gain if they just paid more. To me, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
I've given that advice, you know, as someone who's worked with, you know, when analysts are under me, I have given that advice before. And it's hard to say why. It can just be human nature. Like the new person, just, you know, new girlfriend, new boyfriend. You know, there's a psychology to it where we get the new person and we feel better, so we're just going to give them more money. But yeah, I working at different firms, working at different organizations, I have given that advice. Yeah, even if it's a place that you love, even if you have a great sort of director, executive team, whoever your reporting manager is, even if they're great, it seems more than likely that the right thing to do is, after you get to a point where you feel like you can't have any more growth, just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that other place, you can negotiate. They probably don't know your shitty habits or your weaknesses.
Yeah.
You could sort of like fool them into giving you more money. It's there's something there. I don't know if it's about, you know, if organizations feel like, you know, changing people and new scenery, you get more production out of someone that's new. Maybe that's their understanding. Maybe that it is. But I've dealt with it in the past. I'm dealing with it now. It's something that happens.
Yeah. I see that now with like COVID, working with construction sites and developers and things like that. One day you go to a site, work with somebody, you come up the next day, where's Mike? Well, he left to go to this other company that's working in the same area because they paid him more. It's like, even to this day, it just happens. It's like a quarter more, a dollar more, and they're gone.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
I remember working at, so when I first moved to the States, right, I was I don't know what, Meg, so let me just say this, right? When I was in undergrad, I did not know you needed work experience to get a job.
I don't think anybody knows that until this time.
They fuck me up with that. We did not get properly trained on that at UVA. I'm gonna fuck me up with that.
So I moved to the States thinking, oh, I have a math degree. I could become an actuary or I could become whatever. Man. So long story short, I ended up working at a grocery store packing meat.
Oh, man.
Pause. But, while I was working at the grocery store, they would give us a 15-cent raise,
mm-hmm.
like, once a year, which was, like, barely inflation. That was, like, 0.01% of your check every year. And they had, like, a little graph that showed, like, how much you would get after working for 15 years. And I was like, so after 15 years, I would get, like, a dollar raise? Like, oh what God. The heck is going on here? Yeah, it was crazy. And then when I I was applying for grad school
mm-hmm.
at that time. And I was telling the guys, like, hey, guys, I am going to grad school, but I kind of still want to keep working here. And they were like, are you crazy? Why would you ever want to come back here?
Yeah.
Let me say, you said 15 cents, right? Like 1.5, like 15 pennies.
An hour. Probably even less than that, to be honest. I just given them the benefit of the doubt that they was given that much.
I would say COVID has been shitty in many aspects,
mm-hmm.
but the sort of like the stoppage of work and then this sort of new redefinition of what the workforce and its new negotiating power, mm-hmm. that's something that's good. Like, yeah. Especially seeing like a lot of these like places like McDonald's, a lot of these fast food places that are now like, we're going to pay you about $25 an hour. We'll give you a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you a signing bonus. It's good to see that because I think I'll be the first one to admit it as someone that you know has gained prosperity in the you know tech entrepreneurship side, in the healthcare consulting side. It does. There's a stark difference between the money that someone can do on a white collar job, and what that allows you to do in life, rather than someone that might have a blue collar job or you know just you know a front facing retail job. The start in it in the U.S. is so it's mind-boggling, and it's like how do we expect this individual to have any type of quality of life when we're already giving them you know it's already a hard job it's all these jobs
yeah.
And then we're expecting them to sort of have you know be healthy, be a productive member of society. It's best way to put it. It's fucked up.
I feel like they're already handicapped because their mental health is already taking a toll. Because like I don't have enough money, and then that's all they think about. So like they can't even you know better themselves in any other area of life.
Dude, we've literally talked about this so many times on this podcast. I feel because and I could rant about this for hours. Like, I'm not even gonna start, but I'm just gonna say one thing, and hope I don't start, which is. I'm always confused in like, you know, back in the day, someone working at a automobile factory, like manually putting cars together,
mm-hmm.
they were able to make enough money that they could buy a house 20% down. Interest rates were crazy high back then compared to now. Like I was looking at the trend in loan interest rates for mortgages.
Yeah.
Then and now kind of thing. And they were paying like 15% interest on their mortgages and stuff. And nowadays we're down to like 4-3%. I think we're hovering around 4. And it's just crazy that they could afford paying 20% down and a 15% mortgage. Granted, the houses were cheaper as well.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting that they were able to make more money. Their money was worth more because they didn't have as much inflation. And now in modern times, we're making less money, plus our money is worth less as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why not? Like, I think there was a quote from Ford, which was, he pays his people well because he knows he's going to get the money back anyway. Like, basically, they're going to spend the money on his products. So why not just pay them well? He just giving himself, like, he just basically helping the economy mm-hmm. and helping himself by having these people have more money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of like we were talking back in the day when elections were happening, like back before Obama, they were talking about trickle-down economics and supply-side economics, I think it was. I don't remember the difference. One is supply, one is demand side. And whether or not, which one works better. And I think personally, people having more money has a better effect on the economy than people having less money. But I don't know. I feel like greed in the end is why we're kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I won't indulge your rant because I know we could probably spend a whole show talking about it. I will say that, and you know, Wanted probably knows this well working in the public side. There are so many conflicting powers that be when it comes to trying to provide services or help a community in the public sector. And I feel like sometimes they complicate stuff where there's all these different ongoing initiatives and events and stuff that they want to help the community, but then they sort of forget the basics. And I see it here in the VA. They get all this shit that's going on, and then we forget the fact that milk costs about like $7 a gallon. People could barely buy fruits and vegetables, and it's easier to buy shitty food because it's just, it makes economical sense. People can't find places to live. Rent is too expensive. I wanted in the VI, it's easier to find like luxury homes than it is to find homes for people that are just, you know, middle income and low income. You could find a mansion or a pool faster than you could find like a okay, reasonable apartment to live in. There's all this sort of like, I would say like superfluous activity that happens in the public sector that they try to help people and it doesn't help. I mean, just keep it simple. Let people be able to like buy food, get okay jobs and have a place to live. They worry about so many other shit. And I know it's even more complicated in the state side with just more global and geopolitical stuff, but I'm always surprised at how the people in power sort of just forget about the basics. They just forget. Just make food cheap, make living cheap. And, you know, we all know, we all have some experience with public health and understanding that if people are healthy, I mean, if people got a little bit more money, they live in a better place, that contributes to your, you know, your health. You know, it makes it easier for everybody, but yeah. Don't want to worry about a bunch of other stupid shit.
Yeah. All right, let's move on because I literally wanted to talk about it more, but I'll
let's lighten up a little bit. What do you believe your spirit animal is?
Actually, get a shit written, no. I get two answers for this. So one is the answer that, you know, I'll give you because being a husband and a father, my wife and daughter, they call me Panda Bear, which I'm assuming is their nice way of saying you fat. So I just take it with all the love that comes. But recently, and I don't know why, I actually have one of the shirts on. I've been buying a lot of like online t-shirts just because it's cheaper. Yeah. And I've been buying a lot of stuff with like tribal designs and stuff. I just like it. It just looks cool. A lot of stuff with like Native Americans, like Taino cars and stuff. And I bought a bunch of them thinking it was a lion. Very like cool graphic designs. Thinking it was like a lion with his mouth open. Yeah. And it wasn't a lion. It was a hippo.
So you call yourself like, that?
That's my spirit animal. I'm a fucking hippo. I like it. Honestly, I got a few hippo shirts. I'm going to stick with it.
Can we see it? You have it on right now?
No, I have a Dark Souls video game t-shirt, but I got a couple. It's like the hippo when I get it mouth open in the water.
Yeah.
When I bought it, I think it is a lion or a tiger. And it's when I get it shut home, I look at it and it's like, that's a fucking hippo. Oh, no.
What about you, Bino?
So I did not do any prep for the show. I did not give this any thought, but I think my normal answer is like an owl because that's my favorite animal, generally speaking. But if I had to really pick a spirit animal, come back to me. I'll think on it and I'll tell you in a second.
Okay.
It might still be the owl, but let me just try and think of something else.
For me, it would have to be a wolf because my name means wolf in some language. And I feel like throughout my life, I've had like a battle between being lone wolf and like trying to find my pack. So it's like always splits myself between the two. And even now it's like, I'm trying to feed the lone wolf a little bit some more because he's feeling kind of, you know, down. But the family side of me is really coming out now that I had my son and we're trying to start our own family and try and do things on our own. I can feel like, you know, a balance there somewhat.
I like that. I wanted to get a wolf too. That was going to be my answer because I've been wanting to get a wolf tattoo for a while.
Me too.
But then I realized I'm not a pack. I'm sort of the wolf in the site, shit talking the leader. Like every time the leader said, let me do something, I'm like, you think so? No. So I realized I'm not a wolf. I'll just be a hippo and shit talk all the time.
Jeez. Okay, back to me. I don't know, man. I think I want to be, or I think I'm trying to think of an animal that like prefers to be alone. But like whenever it's around people, it like seems like it's very personable and chatty and stuff. Mm-hmm. But in the back of its head, it's like I can't just wait to leave because I'm getting like tired and more I interact with these people. Mm-hmm. And I think that animal must be a homeless man. So I think my spirit animal is homeless people.
What?
I don't think you know what a homeless person is.
Oh my gosh.
Wait. Let me change. One more try.
All right,
one
let's more see. Try for you. This is all staying in, by the way.
Definitely going to hell. I don't know, man. I'll say my spirit animal is earthworm.
You do know that cats are like that, where
yeah,
somewhat they're very independent, but
yes, a cat.
I'll give you. Yes. I'll give you 8 choices. You can be a platypus, okay, a polar bear, a snow leopard, a solitary sandpiper, which is a bird, a moose, a desert tortoise, a Hawaiian monk seal, or a chuckwalla lizard.
Whatever the bird was.
Solitary sandpiper?
Yeah, I like birds. Birds are my favorite animals, generally.
Oh, there you go. So
let me write that down. In the future, if this question ever comes up again.
It says, most shorebirds stick together and migrate in flocks. The aptly named solitary sandpiper, however, is an exception. This American shorebird typically migrates alone and is usually found solo along the banks of shaded streams and ponds, according to Audubon. Unlike other sandpipers that nest on the ground, the solitary sandpiper prefers boring old songbirds' nests high in the trees. If they're approached, these shiny birds bob nervously, make high-pitched white whistle-like cries, and fly away. The sandpipers are usually only seen together when mating or when mothers are with their young. So, perfect.
Oh, wait. Let me actually see what it looks like. Because if it's ugly, I don't want it.
It's not ugly.
I mean, most birds tend to be, you know, reasonable. Unless it's like a vulture or something like that.
Oh, it's kind of cute. Okay. Yeah. I like it.
All right. What's the next prompt?
Yeah, that looks like me, you know? That's you by the bank shit talking to me.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, pretty much. Picking your teeth and like, okay, this friggin' lion on the shore.
So, Fonzo, when you left the island, did you leave the islands to live in the States?
No, not necessarily. So, I've, with my career, especially when I did healthcare consulting, I spent a lot of time in the States. So, I was in that grind where I would travel like almost like anywhere from like 50% to 75% of the time. All states. Yeah. I'll be Arizona, Philly, New York, Chicago, the Schaumburg area, Florida, Boca Raton, where all the old people live there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I travel a lot. And so it almost felt like I lived stateside, but no, I always had an apartment in St. Thomas.
Yeah.
And then obviously when Amy, my wife, when she sort of started having a career herself, we sort of moved in together.
Okay.
I tried to cut back traveling, but I didn't cut back traveling until I had my daughter, and that was like in my last few years of consulting. So I did that.
So you don't really have like a spotlight of how life is here in the States. You don't have like a real experience of living here.
Yeah, no. I mean, and those spotlights, you know, I'll spend like weeks, sometimes almost like a month living there. Yeah. I had some really effed up experiences in Arizona, especially. I was there when Arizona had introduced the, I think what was considered the papers, please law. So it was basically, it meant like, I want to say police officers or any type of enforcement, they can ask you for your papers at any time with like no reasonable cost.
Yeah.
So in Arizona, I got stopped twice. Got my stupid around when my Arab looking self will be walking down the street. And where I work would be these areas that are very, you know, high end, had hospitals, so had like business and stuff. Yeah. And then I would be in like my little shop pants t-shirt walking over to like Popeyes.
Yeah.
Very suspect. So I had some very, very unreasonable interactions. But yeah, I wouldn't say I've sort of lived what it is to be like fully domesticated in the States.
I feel you.
Sheesh.
Yeah. So, Mino, what's your biggest takeaway from living in the States after living in the VI for so long?
You know, to be honest, I don't really think there's, in terms of, I want to say there's no difference, but there are differences. I think the reason why I want to say there are no real differences is because the stateside is not as golden paved roads and everything is great. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. Like what I initially thought, like I thought, like when I go to the States, it's a land of opportunity. I'm going to be able to get paid very well and live in a very comfortable, my quality of life is going to skyrocket. And that's not been my experience. I mean, it is marginally better than living in the Virgin Islands. It's like I substituted less racism for more, but more lights on than less.
Mm.
So like, trade-off is like I don't have to worry about like half the year not having lights,
yeah,
or having to deal with like as much violence in my everyday life,
mm-hmm.
or worried about it happening around me. I mean, it still happens, but it's like, oh, now I'm just seeing it on the news instead of like literally seeing it in my high school,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I don't know, it's like different trade-offs. It's not really like a one-to-one improvement kind of thing. Is more like what do you value more? And I think the reason why I guess I would prefer living in the States at the moment is just because amenities and stuff like that are better up here. But that's really it.
That's a good takeaway, because I get a text from my godfather like almost every day. We lost power and he works for Domino's, so it's like, damn, like what do? Start over. It's like almost every day. And I realized like with the friends I had from the States when I was in the VI, I understand their confusion, what we had to go through. So like the power gone, they're like, what happened? Like, oh, the power's out. And they're like, and that's okay. We're like, back home, what are we going to do? We're going to call the power company. There's only one to call. Like, you can't switch or anything like that. And it's like, you can see like there's so much opportunity to do something different. Like if your phone doesn't work, you go somewhere else to get another phone. Back home, not so much. If you have bad internet, you just have bad internet. That's it. Well, so that's what I like. I like having different avenues to do different things. I like having options. But I do miss being home, though.
Yeah, so the thing I'll add, so I have a pretty unique perspective on this, because not like I live States, but I spent a lot of time in States. And then because of my job, I was allowed to travel in many different areas. And there are places in the States, very rural like communities, where it could feel like you're living in a VI, where a lot of those commodities that you would have in the stateside, they don't have. And then you end up having the same issues that you have in an island where, you know, obviously, you know, commodities are expensive. You probably have monopolies or certain utilities and stuff. So, you know, like Fionn mentioned, that is a big issue that you have in the islands and you deal with. There's also sort of like, you know, the personable stuff. We're a very small community. So if there is some type of violence, we do suffer from it. I mean, the VI has always been in the rankings for like homicides and stuff like that. We've been having issues with you know, just youth violence, like gangsters and all that stuff for shit. You were kids, I'm pretty sure. Shoot, Fionn, you've been in school with me. So you were there when, you know, all the killings and shootings and stabbings and all that shit's been happening. So that's something that is baked into the community. With that said, the positive is, you know, obviously we were born and raised here, so we're sort of biased to it, but there is sort of a, yeah, you could just call it island, like there is a spirit, there's something that just feels so tranquil about being here, of like just being in your home and being like, you know, hey, Maya and my daughter, jump in the car, let me go beach, and we'll just go beach for like an hour. And it doesn't feel like I have to go through all these loopholes. I want to fish, I could fish, I ain't gonna go get a certificate or do all this other stuff because it's heavily guarded by. So there are some freedoms that you get on an island, but it does come at the expense of many things that seem very trivial when you live in the States.
I feel like it's a big culture shock to move either way, because back home is like so laid back, and you know, the who you know is a lot easier back there because it's so small. And here is like the who you know is, if you have to grow up in this town to be a who you know, it's actually what you know that'll get you through. But I miss having the beach 5 minutes away in any direction, because that's something that I just don't have anymore.
I actually have a question based on this conversation, which is, so in the States, right, one thing I felt was lacking is like community. You have, I mean, unless you're like religious, then you have a community of people there. But if you're just a person living in a neighborhood, you will see, like in this neighborhood that I'm staying in right now, neighbors know each other, but they're also very old. Like they're from the old, they're basically boomers. But younger generations, people go like living in a neighborhood, not knowing any of their neighbors and stuff like that, and not having any community. Nobody's looking out for anybody else. They're just like looking out for themselves, it feels like. And I'm wondering how the culture in the VI is changing. Is it starting to match the States in terms of like people are becoming less community-based, more selfish, or is it still community-based? Because I remember when I was growing up, it was like, oh, miss and miss, go look after the kids while they're playing in the park and stuff like that. And she might be a complete stranger. She might not even be a friend of the family, but she's like looking after the kids. Or even back in the day when people were allowed to, somebody would violently discipline a child for somebody else. And nowadays, like that's frowned upon. So like, Fonso, can you speak on how it's, if it's changed or if it is changing?
I got beat by a lot of people growing up. It used to be a sport. You just used to like gear your ass to random people. Hey, you do something, fuck up. Just random, they'll come smack your ass. But to your question, it is changing. So one thing I would point is, I don't know if you guys follow the census. So the 2020 census, when it came out, it showed that from 2010 to 2020, we lose about 17,000 people. So we went from being a little more than 100K plus to, I think right now, around the middle 80K. And that's for all islands. So that includes St. Croix, St. Thomas, and St. John. Okay. What that indicates is that you're having a community that what you would consider native, the people that bond native, like us, we were leaving. And with that, you still have people coming into the islands, but the people that come into the islands, I mean, it's not bad. You know, you have sort of influx of more wealthy individuals, predominantly white, from the mainland, that come in and they have the avenues to actually purchase in this very high costly real estate area. They have the avenues where I'm complaining about the price of milk to them is very trivial. You know, they're already in paradise. So to them, that they're willing to take those expenses. And so you have sort of had in areas like, I you know, growing up, being sort of like a West boy, going dock, jumping off dock, seeing West and being all over your town, it's different. It's completely different. A lot of the establishments there, I mean, there are a few that are local, there are a few that sort of understand, they've been in the community for a while, but a good portion of it, it's not. So you're seeing this sort of almost, I know it's happened in other islands, Hawaii, it's happened in other Caribbean islands as well, where because of tourism, because of just the cost of living, the native population somewhat sort of shrinks. And then you have sort of this sort of push and pull with outsiders that come in. They predominantly influence a lot because of, you know, their buying power. And then the local natives that are there are slowly, just because of socioeconomic reasons, they just slowly leave. I mean, I've had this conversation with folks here at the RT Park, some of my colleagues, where they just ask me, do you know anybody that could just watch my channel? Like, And it's like, there is no one. They used to have people before. Mm-hmm. They used to have people that do that. Some of the basic stuff you would think would be easy to find here. It's not. I mean, we just finished one of my cohorts for my tech accelerator. We just finished having the first company, because we used to have it before in the past in St. Croix, and now no longer. But we finally have a company that's now starting to do online food delivery. Mm-hmm. And that we go out of online and actually get it delivered to your house from anywhere. It's so trivial stateside. Yeah. We're starting to have that now. We don't have a ride-sharing app or service in the Virgin Islands because of many politically and you know, economic reasons. Obviously, the taxi association here has a lot of undue power, but also taxi man, they're a big part of the economy here, and you want to keep that insulated to the taxi man. We're working to hopefully create a ride-sharing service for the Virgin Islands in the next few years. But, you know, stuff like that, it just shows how, if you're a kid growing up watching Disney or Nickelodeon like me, like us, we see what life is mainland. We grew up here and then we're like, nah, let me go mainland, see how it is. And then when we have a taste of it, the numbers show most people just stay.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot more to that as well, because education, careers and things like that, they push you to other places to look for them. And then once you're there, I feel like people move and then they end up getting stuck, not stuck in a bubble, but they just find themselves in the rhythm, and then you can't really break that in to go back home because you're not going to have that there.
Yep. But what you described sound a lot like gentrification. Literally, freaking island-wide gentrification, it sounded like.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's been going on for a long time in at least in St. Croix. I don't know much about St. Thomas. Where, you know, like all our gas stations are owned by non-local, well, not all, but most of the gas stations owned by non-local, mm-hmm. The grocery stores owned by non-local, like basically things that you absolutely need seem to be owned by non-local. And then you would have like some of the more like, not necessarily needs, but things people would like to do, like eating tarts and stuff, they're owned by locals. These things that you don't actually need, but they're more like pleasure type things.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just sounds, I guess it's kind of sad, but on the other hand, is like, this is just part of the natural economic pressures of living on an island. Like, of course, if you can't afford to open a gas station, you're not going to open a gas station. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, people who come into the island are going to have more money, and as you described, they're going to be like, oh, this is $7 for a loaf of bread. Sure. That's nothing. Like I can afford to live. I can afford to buy that and buy a house and whatever else I want to do. Mm-hmm. So my concern is some kind of weird class system where it's going to be a bunch of white people coming in, buying up all the stuff. And then you're going to have all the poor blacks basically serving them. It's practically going to be like slavery all over again, because the pay is like $7 an hour for no matter what job you're doing, pretty much. And then if you're a black person, you're basically just serving the whites, who are now the rich people living on islands. So it's just a class-based type of situation going on.
I always wonder about the psychology of that. Like, who feels the pressure to actually fight back, or like feel a way that people are coming in and taking over for the most part? Like, I want to understand it, and I probably won't be able to, because there's people that work, you know, they have businesses and things like that, but there's also the locals who see people coming, and I want to know what that feels like to them, to see that their culture is like not necessarily dwindling away, but it's getting watered down over time, because the farmers are getting less and less. People who can make the tarts and things like that are getting less and less, because no one wants to learn that anymore, because the jobs now are going into more tech, which is not a knock on this conversation, but that's what's been happening, you know?
Yeah, I sort of want to give credit to where credit's due. They are still both, you know, public-private organizations that try to do good for the VA. There are still people that are trying to sort of like do a lot of stuff when it comes to preserving the culture of the VA. Actually, we had a really awesome nonprofit recently that used the co-working system here for ABI. And we were talking a lot about historical preservation, a lot from an architectural and building perspective. And you were also talking about just how do we educate the youth? How do we just bring interest into VI culture and then preserve VI culture? Mm-hmm. There are people trying to do that. Good. The thing that it all boils down to is money. And unfortunately for the Virgin Islands, over the last 20, 25 years, we have not done a good job of, one, helping our economy get to a point where it is resilient. And that means having jobs that are more than outside, like the stuff that usually is there. Our economy is so dependent on tourism and everything that comes from that. Restaurant, hotel, entertainment base for tourism. And we haven't done a good job of sort of creating sectors or market areas where people can come. And folks like Ayo, we study mainland, and then there's actually a pathway for me to come to the islands, have a career, have a job, and stay in Abia.
Yeah.
We haven't done a good job of that. And I think that there have been a lot of initiatives. I sort of work for the government. I'll be the first one to say, I don't think a lot of those initiatives have been fruitful in sort of bringing people and keeping them in. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there are also powers where you sort of have this pull where because you don't have sort of VI people coming in and sort of taking over the island and sort of reinvesting on the island, it's going to get filled somehow because the demand is still there. There's a demand for gas. There's a demand for food. There's a demand for all these sort of novelties and commodities that people are going to want. So then whoever fills it tends to be someone that probably is not bought into the VI culture. And to them, it's just, it's just an opportunity. It's an economic opportunity. It's sort of the, it is what U.S. capitalism is. So you sort of have that loss of people. And, it becomes sort of this vicious cycle. And I'm hoping, I can do my part to break it. But, it is very difficult.
Yeah. I feel like at this point, anybody who stays home and tries to preserve the culture, tries to grow the economy or create avenues for people to live in the islands and move back and stuff like that. I feel like y'all are should be thanked for your service in a way, kind of soldiers. Because I couldn't do it. I would be like, fuck that. I go into the States or I go into another country where they already have this stuff in place. I don't have time for this.
So you're not a pioneer. But,
y'all actually have the stamina. I don't know what's the correct word. Y'all have this thing that makes you love your home. I mean, I love my home too, but y'all love it so much that y'all willing to actually stick around for less pay than you would make somewhere else and actually try and make it work. So, I really appreciate and respect that.
Yeah, I feel like we need pioneers like you, Fonso, to do things like that. Because if I knew and I had the security knowing that I could stay and do something like that, I would do it as well. But to start myself is definitely harder,
It's circumstantial. I mean, I'll take the credit for it, but it is also circumstantial. I know a lot of people that they're in the islands because they get lucky. They finish UBI. They find a pathway and they sort of made that pathway. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that gone and come back. And when they came back, they were very extremely lucky in the stateside and they're able to bring their business or sort of do something where they can live in a VI. Mm-hmm. I've actually met a lot of people that are sort of dual. You don't really call them a dual citizen, but they're almost dual living where they spend half the time in a VI, half the time in the stateside. And I think that's actually becoming a more sort of possibility and a more reasonable sort of way of doing it. Yeah. But I would say outside of me, I think there are a lot of people, especially on the nonprofit side, that do a lot of good work. I'll have my wife, Amy. Amy's been doing Girls Who Code. Mm-hmm. So that's like a STEM learning program. No reason why she got to do it. She ain't getting paid for it.
Yeah.
It's not like the stateside branch giving her any kudos or anything. She's literally doing it for the love of it. And she's been doing that program for almost a decade. She started in St. Thomas. She's doing it here in St. Croix. And, there are people like that who sort of do initiatives and stuff. But, it is difficult. At the end of the day, it comes down to money. And if you can't get money, it is really difficult to get any type of programming up and running.
I'm looking at the chat finally.
You're right back. Sorry.
It's okay. Someone in chat said that there's almost no natives on the east side of the islands, which is something I probably knew from childhood. I wouldn't expect anybody like me to live down there.
I'm assuming they're talking about St. Croix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is. You could see it. I'm a West boy, true and true. And you could see it. You saw from west and then you drive and you're in Kristianstad, and then you keep driving and you pass, like, you know, the back part of the island, off of the better. You're going all the way to Crayon's Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely different. Like, when you get to where the casino is,
yeah,
like DV and stuff, that's a different island than what Mid Island mm-hmm. and, you know, the west side of the island is. It's a completely different, it almost feels like a completely different island, a completely different one.
Yeah. Growing up and going to Kermit's Park, I just, like, in my head, I knew, like, this is not where I belong. Like, I could never live here. You know, I could never afford to live here. There's a whole castle here. What? How can I live here?
Let me ask you a question. You ever do the poor people thing, which is all you're going to do is drive around and go drive Kristianstad to go see the pretty house though?
Yeah.
You ever do that poor people thing?
Yeah. Of course.
I remember doing that with my father. And he always took out to the castle on them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess the only way to change it is that people actually buy land there, but it's how, you know? Natives, I don't think natives can make enough in their lifetime to do that.
We could always crowdfund, I guess, potentially.
There's that. I think we need more. I think the government here is investing in a lot of areas. And to their credit, you know, they're trying to do stuff for food security. They're trying to do stuff with work. Because, you know, that's the fact. We need jobs for people to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I think an area that's been sort of a miss has been a little bit on the housing side. There isn't enough, I would say, program and initiatives for reasonable housing in the VA. And I think that will solve a lot of our problems. And you know, the government here has a lot of, like, property. And mm-hmm. that property is not used in any way. Those properties could be apartment complex. It could be something to help alleviate the sort of the housing needs we have here in FBI.
Yeah.
And I think it's major, man. I especially with COVID over the last few years, with COVID, the hurricanes, housing is probably, I would say, the number one reason why a lot of people just can't make it here in FBI.
You know, since we've been talking about technology, I wonder if there's any new architectural technologies that's been, like, created in modern times that could, like, that's better than just friggin' reinforced concrete for withstanding hurricanes. Because I'm hoping by now we would have something slightly better at least. But I don't know much about that avenue or that, I can't think of the word, but you know what I mean.
There is. I think you see other islands doing it. I'll say the two things that come to my mind when you talk about, like, sustainable housing is there are homes that you can build very affordably and securely with we do call those like shipping containers.
Like a trailer.
The trailer. You can build homes with that. And there have been initiatives on our islands, and I know there's some people that have interest here in the islands to sort of build something like that. That can create very sustainable, very affordable housing for people. So that's one avenue. And then I know there's been a lot of talk recently about 3D printing, especially on the industrial side, and how 3D printing can make it easier for, you know, just for mass production and for in what would you would call difficult to access areas like the VA, you know, an island in the middle of the ocean,
yeah,
to sort of create high-end construction projects and whatnot. But at the end of the time, it takes money. It requires both, like, a public and private partnership. It requires leadership and intelligent people all to be on the table and sort of create a plan and put something full together. And I'm just going to say it. I think the VA has a significant lack of real leadership, both in the public and private side. I think I've interacted with a lot of folks, and it a lot of the times I feel more disappointed than if anything impressed. And then, you know, it's a reality. And these are a lot of the people that are in positions of power, position of influence. And, you know, and it sucks to know that these are the people that can probably make a change or, you know, could decide things that could help people. And, you know, it just ain't it. Ain't it. That's what I put it.
When are you going to run for governor?
Never.
I think that's a big problem we have as well. It's just the same people, the same faces. Not to say that they should change, but there hasn't been much change since I was a kid.
Yeah, I feel like part of the problem is we don't have many intelligent people running for office. Like, they're just the regular old, like, in high school, they were, like, the popular kid. But, like, they were, like, also the dumb, like, or average person as well.
Yeah.
So if you just have a bunch of people with literally no kind of experience with anything besides maybe working at friggin' McDonald's, running for governor, like, how do you expect the economy to, like, of course you're going to have bad leadership. Like, they don't have any leadership experience besides maybe leading their basketball team in high school. Like, I don't know.
To be fair, I don't think anybody just went from McDonald's to governorship. That would be a fucking story. I think what happens here is, and it's because I have to. You can be a governor with someone with a very impressive background and come into a power position. The problem with that is you still need to build a team. You still need to put commissioners. You still need to put, you know, deputy commissioners, assistant commissioners, all these people that are going to run these things. And that is where the workforce sometimes in the BI sort of fails us. You know, we, like you said, like it's the popular kid, not the smart kid. Mm-hmm. A lot of those ABN students, I have been the ABN students. Y'all to leave. So then who's left? It's a lot of individuals who have probably been in the ecosystem for, just have experience, don't really, have not been exposed to mainland ideas or to a private sector. That honestly, I'm a big believer in exposing yourself to the private sector in whatever market or avenue you are, because they're leading whatever it is they're doing, because they have to, you know, the incentive is there. So you end up with a lot of these commissioners and people in power that are the ones that have to do the work. A governor is just a spokesperson. He got a million and 20 things to do. It's the people around him that got to do the work. And, you know, you find yourself sometimes in those meetings and those discussions with individuals like that, it feels lacking at times.
I could touch on that in two ways. One, because I'm a supervisor myself right now, and it's like, I have like 20 things to do a day, but they all get done because I'm not the one doing them. I have to just pass it along to the right person to get the job done in time and in a good fashion. The second thing is that you mentioned is like a negative feedback loop where we don't have the incentive to stay, so we leave, but someone needs to do a job that we can do and they give it to somebody else. But if there's a way for us to stay here in a different job and just, you know, I'll use the word fester. Just fester here in the islands and do our job. And then, hey, we need somebody to run this. We could just, you know, do a lateral and be right there. So now what they have to do now is to look for someone else from the mainland that used to be here, or someone that could actually do the job, which is what you're saying. And that's who's going to fill it in. And they may not have the best of the culture in mind at all times.
Yeah. No more input from me. I would say it's a very complex situation with not a very straightforward solution. And I'm not the best at trying to figure out complex answers for complex problems.
At the same time, I'll add, with all those problems, you still have to add the usual issues that you would have with any political system. There are individuals with money that have influence in the system. There are a bunch of other auxiliary things that come up. We live in an island. If a hurricane hit, that puts a stop to everything, and we got to worry about disaster recovery. That's been an issue for us for the last 5 years, because we get a hurricane around 2017. Mm-hmm. We're still in disaster recovery. It's been pretty, I would say it's been pretty poor. I don't think we've recovered. I was just saying from an infrastructure standpoint, I don't think we've recovered fast enough. So you then have that on top of all the other stuff that comes with, you know, the community and economic development and social development and all that stuff. So it can be, yeah.
I have a question. And this is just random thought, not internet to what we're talking about really. What are your thoughts on solar as a replacement for WAPA, like in terms of electricity?
I think my thoughts are that we should have been investing on some type of renewable energy for a while. Mm-hmm. I know WAPA has been doing a lot of sort of like they've done studies, they've worked with other like for-profit and nonprofit organizations. There was this one organization that had an idea for solar deployment on St. Thomas. I know recently the governor talked about wanting, you know, if the stuff with oil prices kept getting pretty bad, creating a sort of like an emergency project funded by, I don't know where, but create an emergency project where they would like emergency implement solar panel in St. Croix to sort of alleviate WAPA and stuff. I think that those projects anywhere takes time, takes leadership, takes planning. And that the monopoly here being WAPA has failed miserably. And one of the things you go back to is WAPA, if you look at any like local media articles, WAPA has been going through a bunch of different sort of issues with their own sort of management, and money is going places that probably they shouldn't have. So they're dealing with their own sort of bullshit. And I feel like that's been going on for a while. Meanwhile, they keep going up the price of gas. The price of energy with sort of, they have that, I forgot the specific name, but basically anytime the price of gas goes up, they have a way to offset it, basically charge people more money.
Yeah, I remember. I don't know the name of it either. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically my way of saying it is like, yes, we should have had that for a while. We should have been looking into any alternative renewable source of energy, but it's been a clusterfuck for WAPA, you know, the powers that be.
Gotcha.
Do you guys think that good/intelligent people tend not to gravitate towards positions of power?
Selfishly, I'll say yes, because we're smart enough to know that that shit gonna stress me out.
Mm-hmm. I think it's not that. I think people that gravitate to these positions of power, it's a personality. It's a thing. It's you want to be in charge, and you want to be the center of attention, and you like sort of that delegation and whatnot. It's more of that type of person exists, and those people gravitate to those positions. Smart people don't do it. Some of those people can be smart. Mm. Some of those people can be assholes. Some of those people can be dumb. So it's more of a personality trait. But like I said, I think it's a lot of times is it's not them the issue. The issue is when they gotta actually like delegate the walk.
Mm-hmm.
If you delegate the walk to people that ain't know what the fuck they're doing, then you know your shit walk.
Gotcha.
Yeah, what he said. But also what he said is, what I'm taking from it is, and kind of speaking back into the issue we were talking about before, which is people leaving. So the smart people who could be in leadership roles aren't even there to fill that space. And that's part of the problem, I think, mm-hmm. is because as Wanted pointed out before, there are no jobs that can serve like an intermediary between, okay, I'm out of school now, I'm working, I'm making good money, and now, okay, you know what, I want to become a governor, or I want to become a senator. Because they don't have those intermediary jobs that pay well enough for you to stay in the islands, you leave, and then all that's left are the people who maybe don't have as much knowledge about what they need to be doing staying in the islands. And then, of course, if they have that personality, like Babel pointed out, then they become the leadership for the island. So it's kind of like you guys keep saying, like a feedback loop kind of thing.
The last thing that I would add, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, because I think it's sort of it's a touchy subject, and I try to be very sensitive about it, because before in the past I brought it up a lot in my RT part job here, and I realized, hey, it's kind of fucked up you bringing it up when all the people that control your paycheck are this demographic. The people that we're losing is the young people, and it's people of a certain age. We have a very, our average age in the Virgin Islands is very high. That's why when COVID hit, there was a big fear here, because it was like every other person is an old person. If they get COVID, they're going to die. So what that means is that you have a lot of people in positions of power that are entrenched. They're older. I don't like to use the word boomer, but you know, they're boomers. And with that comes a certain mindset, a certain idea, way of how things should work, a certain way of how things should operate. And you don't have fresh blood. You don't have diversity of ideas. You don't have diversity of thought. You don't have diversity of education. And that causes real problems in any organization. I feel like the Virgin Islands are both in a public system and a private system. We have that everywhere. And that's a big issue. And that gets to the whole, you know, that you know, adverse sort of reaction to an implementation of technology or to implementation of new ideas. You know, if I went to school when computers weren't a requirement, why the fuck would I want to put computers or technology into my current day-to-day work?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, let's move on to something light again.
Okay, that's
video games.
What's so we're all gamers. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
We're all gamers. Matter of fact, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, when we were kids, like, around high school time, well, maybe junior high, that's, like, when I first started playing, like, really seriously video games. That's, like, around when Smash Brothers came out, Smash Bros. Mm-hmm. And we would just be rooting Smash Bros, like, every weekend. Just, it was almost like we were training for, a like, an e-sport. Because we would just be rooting the heck out of Smash Bros. So let's talk about video games and the future of gaming. How have you guys kind of evolved as gamers since like being a child into like adulthood?
I'll go first. Then I think the obvious is the stamina aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Like when I was growing up, I could root game Ali. And now maybe because I've had the medium for such a long time, if it's not like engaging, I find it hard to be there for more than an hour. It could be anything. It could even be like I love fighting games, Tekken, Street Fighter, anything that's like 1v1, where I'm fighting, I'm playing someone that's not the PC. I love that shit. Yeah. And even now, when I try to like relax and play a Street Fighter match, I can only do it for an hour max. It's part of getting old, part of, you know, all those come with being a parent and being a worker, but that's where it's evolved for me, where gaming now has to be very, it has to satisfy me really fast. And I feel like it's also been part of the internet where now a lot of our entertainment is like curated to like chunks and bits, TikToks, mm-hmm. short YouTube videos. So I feel like it's happened that to my gaming experience where I want it to be quick, I want it to be fun, and then that's it. I don't know if it's just because.
I mean, I fall asleep playing video games live on stream. Like, I'm still doing the clicking. It's like, I can't do, I need a story, I need something to do, something to go find, you know, like the other games I play. And I feel like my evolution has been kind of like a sine wave, because I get into games, I'm like, this is boring, and I stop playing for like months, then I get back into it again, I'm really invested. So it has to be a game where there's a good story and like the controls are good. Like everything has to be aligned perfectly for me to enjoy it. Otherwise, it's just like it's boring.
Yeah, you know, you become more picky. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's funny though? I literally told Babo that story when we were talking offline, when you wasn't there in the meeting. I literally told him that story.
Man, what about you, Mino?
I would say, so when I was younger, I used to love RPGs a lot, and I used to love like random little quirky games. I guess nowadays they're called indies, mm-hmm. but back then they were just like these unknown games that nobody really knew about. So for instance, like Monster Rancher, like I never knew anybody who knew about Monster Rancher, or like Ark the Lad. You know, these kind of games where it's like, they're like, to me, they're like classics. They're like so good, but like practically nobody ever played them. I found them and I somehow magically found them and I played them. But nowadays, I find that I'm more into strategy games. Games that kind of make you think more, because I get bored, like you said. Like if I'm playing an RPG, I don't feel like reading all of that text. I want either them to have voice acting so I could just listen to it,
yep.
or I can just be clicking through the text and just hoping that I'm doing the story because I do not know what's going on. All I want to do is the fights.
Yeah.
So kind of the same. I think my threshold for playing is still about the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I if I could play video games for a living, I would, but I don't think I'm entertaining enough to stream it. Or my skin isn't light enough for me to like get a following very easily. So that's part of it as well. And also I don't have the understanding of technology and the patience to like learn how to use technology to do it as well. So that all the cards are stacked against me becoming a professional streamer. But if I could play video games for a living, I would, because I would just try new games. And similar to you guys, I get bored with games very quickly. So I would try a game for like a month, barely even halfway through the game. Like if it has a story, I'm just like, okay, next game. I'm kind of over this, even though I want to complete the game. Yeah. But it's like, I just don't feel it's too... It starts to feel like a chore more than fun. So then I just move on to the next game.
I feel like you, growing up, I used to gravitate more towards games that weren't mainstream, which is hardness only because if you wanted to find a guide for that game in a book, you wouldn't, because there's no space for a game like that. So you have to figure it out on your own. And even now, when everybody's playing like Call of Duty or Elder Scrolls or whatever they're playing now, I don't want to play the same as everybody else. I want to play something that I want to play, you know? And I feel like that's a big disadvantage when it comes to gaming, because finding your own way is harder than just following everybody else.
Yeah, my boy hates the word meta. And he actually hates meta.
Yeah, I don't. I can't stand
it. I used to be like that. Specifically for like single player games, like anything that was popular, like any AAA single player game, mm-hmm. I didn't gravitate to it. And then it changed when I started to, like, you know, I got real busy. Mm-hmm. I played The Last of Us. I don't know if you guys know about it.
Yep.
So The Last of Us, and I actually played it when my wife was pregnant with our daughter. Mm-hmm. And the beginning scene of it is very emotional because the main character, you know, spoiler, he loses his daughter. Mm-hmm. It was the first game to ever make me cry, to like make me get emotional.
Yeah.
So it was like the first real single player AAA game that I played. So now my gaming consumption is it has to be something that can rival like a Marvel movie or like something of that. It has to be like a really good AAA game.
Yeah.
So The Last of Us, its sequel was really good. I'm right now playing Elden Ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I play an hour every now here and there. I'm a big fan of Dark Souls game. I kind of like those games with high difficulty.
Yeah.
But Elden Ring is fucking awesome. It doesn't feel like a chore. It's very open world. And I like, voice acting. I'm not I stopped reading shit since my PSP days. Like,
yeah.
Like, that was it. That was like the last time I tried to even like fuck around with an RPG where I got to read like two anime characters talking about something stupid.
Mino could tell you that. Once I have to read, I'm going to start yawning for sure. Most definitely.
But speaking about Marvel movies, have you guys seen the recent Batman movie?
I have.
Which one? Be the emo one, the one with the pana from
exactly.
I did. It was weird. I kind of loved everything about the movie. Kind of felt kind of meh about him, but. It's different. It was very different. And I kind of like when comics are more serious. Like, I like the Joker one with, forget the guy. But
Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that one sort of felt a little bit in the vein of it. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah. Me too. I thought it was more, I liked it a lot because I felt like it was more true to the comics. Like, it's a detective comic, right? That's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, he should be doing a lot of trying to figure out what's going on. And yeah, he's going to fight and stuff, but that's not supposed to be the main crux of Batman. Batman is not necessarily just all action, action, action. So I like that they were more true to the comics in that way. And it was a little annoying that he was emo. It was kind of weird. But at the same time, it was like, but it's different. So it's easier to accept.
I feel like the comics painted Bruce as a, you know, like a egocentric kind of person, more, you know, of an extrovertish person. But this one was like, this don't feel like normal Bruce Wayne, but it's not bad.
Yeah. The way I interpreted it is that this is like Bruce Wayne right when he first came back to Gotham kind of thing. Like, he's younger. He's still trying to figure out, like, I think in the next time they make the movie, they could have him have the epiphany like, oh, I need to start being in the public eye. Like this one is him like before he like started being more in the public
yeah,
eye.
It was like right. Like, it was like right on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true. That's sort of the interpretation I got. What really sort of interested me a lot about this movie is I don't know if you guys seen the deleted Joker scene that was in the movie and then they took it out.
No, not yet.
So there's a Joker scene. I'm pretty sure you could get it on YouTube. That
is that after the credits?
No. This is a deleted scene. And then I think Warner Bros. And Eman sort of like put it out on YouTube. So you actually see the actor that they got to play Joker. This Joker is very different from the past Joker. It's a lot of like body horror with him because it looked like he got fucked up in a fight, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very interested in that and the fact that Joker, Batman already knows Joker. Joker was already in jail. So there's sort of like even a pre-story to this, like what happened with Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And like Fionn mentioned, like there is all, it looks like, Batman is gonna like evolve now and stop being so emo in his like Bruce persona and try to be more the eccentric sort of Bruce that we sort of love and love.
I feel like there's one aspect that they're missing because if you guys watched the TV show Gotham, that was like
I've seen a little bit of it.
That was like young Bruce, and then we have the old Bruce. I want the Bruce that actually goes off to find himself, and I want to know that story. I'll see it like on the screen.
Yeah, I think right now in the comics, they're kind of exploring that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, I think, I remember, I don't really read the comics. I just follow a lot of people who do read the comics and then talk about it on YouTube.
Yeah.
So that's how I have knowledge about these things. So it's secondhand. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. But basically, it looks like it shows him going out and training in deserts and stuff. And there was this other guy. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can look up his name. He becomes a... kind of like a sidekick to Bruce in one story.
Mm.
So it kind of, I think they're kind of exploring his like, his missing, his void year kind of thing in the comics now.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I feel like they try to do that a little bit with when Christian Bale played Batman. Mm-hmm. And I think the first one, it had a Ra's al Ghul and his whole sort of like becoming a ninja and being. Mm. So they kind of explored it, but they didn't really get into it. It was more like he was rich. He's a white boy. He went places, somehow find this magical ninja tribe and magic ninja. And then there you go, Batman.
Yeah. I feel like games and movies, they're falling into the lines of what society is. It's like, just give them everything right now, fast, nothing boring, and keep it moving. Because, for movies, I fall asleep too in movies. Because you got to keep going. Or it gotta be something that has me like, I want to find an answer myself as well, like I want to know who it is. And to speak on what you said, I feel like Batman needs all that action to keep people entertained. Like you and I would enjoy like having him figure out the riddles and things like that. But I think that the villain brings out that certain part of who Bruce is at the time. Because if it's a Joker, he knows, just find the Joker wherever he is and deal with him. But with the Riddler, there's going to be a puzzle, there's going to be riddles, there's a lot of things to figure out.
I found the name of the guy. His name is Ghost Maker.
Mm.
So, yeah.
You said I was a sidekick or a villain?
No, not a sidekick. It was a guy who he met on his journey when he was doing all his trainings. I think this guy is also like a rich billionaire who want to like save the world kind of thing too. Mm. But their approaches to how they want to do it is different. And then it kind of become enemies because Ghostmaker wants to, like, I guess, kill the bad guys. Yeah. And Batman, he has his firm stance against not killing.
Yeah.
So they kind of butt heads. And then later on, they, like, call a truce and kind of team up for a little while. So it's, like, that kind of convoluted, weird relationship kind of thing.
Yeah, he's more violent.
Yeah. But I like his name, Ghostmaker, because he makes them into ghosts. Get it?
Yeah, he's very, very edgy. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think it goes into my growing up and how, not just video game, but media changes. I have a lower tolerance for anything that just doesn't pass the sniff test from a realistic or just... like actual interesting standpoint. That's one of the reasons why I grew up loving anime, and now I'm one of the biggest anime haters you can find, because I mean, it has to be something really, really good, because if it's so, some of these fucking scenarios are so like fantastical and stupid, and I know it's not for me. I'm a dude. This is for like an impressionable teenager. I get that. But I kind of miss the days of like really, really well thought out animes, Cowboy Bebop, Trigun, Death Note, Code Geass, like very good. You have to actually think about the plot animes. Now everything is, you know, power fantasies, you know, these very like formulaic shonens and isekai types. I struggle with anime, I struggle with movies, and I struggle with anime entertainment because of that.
Speaking about anime, you know what I hate about anime? They're always so emotional all the damn time. Like, why are you crying? Shut up.
I think my thing about anime is I don't like when they do the cut to the cartoony version of them. That's always turns me off for some reason. I don't know why.
You don't like chibis?
Like when they turn into like a cartoony thing and it's like crying, like no. That's why I like to watch like the darker ones, like the more graphic ones, because it's gonna be the same art style the whole way through.
Yeah. Have you guys ever watched the fuck is his name? Hellspawn? Not Hellspawn. Spawn. Yeah. Have you ever watched Spawn, the movie Spawn? The movie about Spawn? It's an animated movie.
I think I have.
It's very dark. Very, very dark. A lot of naked bodies is something that kids should not be watching, but I saw it when I was a kid. And instantly became one of my favorite movies, obviously.
I don't remember the animated. I remember the kind of not so good, like, real life one.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think it had John Leguizamo playing the clown. And then again, like, the weird scene at the end where he's fighting, like, the devil. And it's like, yeah, the graphics aren't good because it came out, like, really, really loud. I remember that one, but I don't remember the animated one.
Meter. You guys need to see it. Just make sure your kids are not around, because a lot of nudity, a lot of blood, a lot of everything that should have been in the movies, but they couldn't put in because then they would have to make it super rated R or whatever the rating would have to be.
Was it Castlevania on Netflix?
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Ask if you played video games when you were growing up.
Yes, a little bit.
Now go ahead, Mino.
I actually never played it. I don't really play like a lot of action platformer type games like that.
He's weird.
Yeah, I prefer more like RTS or like. I like strategy, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm playing the game with Mino. You know, it's called Indies Lies, and I've never been into a game so much in my entire life. Like, I'll play this game for 8 hours straight and not look away, not do anything else, because it's one of the games I hate the most. It's a card game, but I love it.
Is that Indies Lies?
Yeah, Indies Lies is a mobile game.
It's also on Steam.
Yeah.
But it's more expensive on Steam for some reason.
Twice as much.
Yeah. All right, let's move on, because we could literally talk about this shit all day, I feel. So let's talk about our dynamic, our relationship dynamic back in undergrad. Because since Wanted is the one who kind of put this in our notes here, explain your thought process.
So Mino has a PB&J, or half a sandwich behind him for a reason, because I said that Babel could have been the bread to our peanut butter and jelly. So he didn't understand what that meant, but Mino and I were always together, and Babel and Mino were always together. That's how I met Babel. But I feel like Mino and I had a different type of lifestyle, where we'd be go out all the time, we'd be partying and things like that, but I haven't ever seen you out with us, or at all, Babel.
Yeah, he was too mature for us.
I wouldn't say I was mature. I would say I hated this shit so much when I was when I started my career, and I hated that fuck. People said you have an old soul. Reality of it was I am sort of like an introvert, and when I was at UVI, I may or may not have been doing activities where I was very conscious of what those activities may or may not do to the people I love. So I try my best not to associate outside of UVI with people. And, you know, I'll leave it at that. But, yeah, I have a very eccentric background. I come from a very humble background. And there were things I had to do in my life to sort of get to where I am. And in St. Thomas, that shit was a shit show. I live in Sabah for like 2 years. just to paint the picture. So yeah, I had some friends outside UVI, and I would never want those friends to meet that.
Understood.
Yeah, and I knew about those peripherally. I didn't know the details, I guess for a reason, but I kind of knew about that a little bit, which is why I was like, you know what, I just respect it, just let him do his thing.
Yeah. But who knows? I mean, this could be the start of a brand new, beautiful friendship.
For sure. For sure.
And
come on, no.
And to be fair, and I heard this from a lot of people that I used to be friends with, I'm sort of an asshole friend where, like, if I know you, I put minimum effort. Like, and it's one of the things that I hate about me. Mm-hmm. I put minimum effort to keep in touch. Mm-hmm. And I've lost, you know, I'll be honest. I mean, me and Fiona, we've marginally kept in touch. Fiona was my best man for my wedding. That's how insane it is. I don't have that many friends. And a lot of the friends that I have when I grew up and stuff, I sort of lost the connection. I've lost some really good friends, people that have been great to me just because, you know, I was an asshole and I sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes time, but you need to get older. You sort of get caught up in the grind, especially when you're young, about career, education, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's only when you get older and you have time to sort of like reflect and think back, and it's like, man, I was really an asshole. I was really a dick. And I have a few friends that over the last few years, I've been trying my best to reconnect with them to no avail. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't know what I would do. Because if I were to reconnect with them, and these are people like from like St. Croix back in my high school days, I really don't know what to say. Because mm-hmm. life, you know, 10, 15 years, we're parents, mm-hmm. they've got careers, husbands, wives, like the world has happened. And for me to just selfishly be like, hey, you were a really good friend to me 15 years ago, I would like to reestablish that now. It's so fucking corny and stupid now that I try my best to sort of just, yeah, it's whatever. And obviously now, I kind of double down, sort of like, you know, I'll be here. And I don't, honestly, outside my wife, you know, my brothers, I got about so many brothers. I don't really have someone that I will call a friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to have a best friend prior to like Fiona back for the UVI. I'm before I got to UVI, high school friend, and then they get killed. Mm-hmm. The really fucked up thing that happened. And I was like, well.
You know, I feel like that's also my experience. Like, so for example, when I first moved to the States, I didn't have anybody up here besides the girl I was with, and then we broke up. But similar to you, like I fell out of touch with everyone, like even Kurt. We stopped talking. I would just do my own thing. I was actually super friggin' lonely, but here and there, I would reach out to like Wanted, I'll reach out to you, like reach out to like people who like I consider like my closest friends. And you know, I also am the kind of person, I'm a quality over quantity kind of person. So I don't have a lot of friends, but the people who I do consider friends, I truly do consider them my friend. Like I would trust them with like my life for the most part. So for me, not having anyone to talk to and stuff, like seeing everybody like grow apart, you know, Babel had his family and started his family and back in the islands. And he had his, when you had your kid, I also felt bad because I was like, damn, I want to meet your daughter when she was like still a baby. But because of being poor and also not having much incentive to go back home, besides to just see like your baby and my family, I just never really was able to come back. And now your daughter is what, like 10? How old your daughter is?
I have 7 right now.
7. Like 7 years later, and then I just feel like it don't make sense for me to meet her now. What's she done old? Like, she don't care about me. So, like, that's kind of how I feel, like, kind of how you were saying, like, you want to reach out to people and be like, hey, I want to rekindle this friendship. But then it feels awkward because it's like, how do you go about saying that without sounding like a weirdo in a way? But I don't know. I feel like on some level, it's still worth a try. And it's also kind of weird, too, because, like, especially when it comes to dealing with female friends, you don't want to like reach out to them and try that because then they might think that you're trying to like have ulterior motives.
No, Fian, so, they will think that about you, not about me. You're the one.
Yeah, not about you, but for me for sure. Because I still, no, I just kidding. I'm married.
I feel like I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum for you guys. Like, I feel like I'm the incessant friend, and that has caused me to lose friends, which is weird. So then it just causes me to just shut down completely for some time. Like this year, I decided to not text anybody and see who texts me first. And then those who did, who stayed, I mean, I keep everybody's numbers, but people don't like to talk to me for some reason. So it just makes me shut down and not talk to anybody else.
Sheesh.
One, that's I think that's the fear of anybody. Yeah. For me, it's also... And I think it stems from like how I grew up and who I am. Oldest of 7 kids.
Mm-hmm.
My parents not college educated. A lot of my family's not college educated. I'm probably the first one, sort of like in my immediate, you know, several generations of my family to actually be college educated. Even within my family, I sort of feel this sort of almost separation. Like anytime there's a gathering or something, and we want to talk about anything.
Mm-hmm.
There is a stark difference of the quality of conversation I'm going to have with my brothers and my dad about anything. Let's say current events, Ukraine. That conversation is not a conversation that I feel in any way adequate to add anything because, you know, it's not to shit on them, but, you know, some of my brothers are not educated. My dad is not educated. They have a very sort of insulated sort of island mentality and a way of seeing things. I've talked about, like, toxic masculinity. In my family, toxic masculinity is sort of like a fucking trend. Like, everybody has this fucked up way of talking. Yeah. I actually have like a meme with one of my cousins, one of the few cousins that I'm actually really close to, where I got a younger brother that for him, everything is king. Like anything. You ask him like, hey, you want to do this? Mean the entire and fuck. Like a true island, just close off minded person. So I have that with my family. So then personally, I sort of like, in a fucked up way, sort of brought it as well with like friends where I myself sort of, you know, not see much or not try to pursue friendship relationships because I feel like, yeah, it's fine to sort of be the loner.
Yeah. You know something? That's the next thing too. Like, this is kind of like related to that like toxic masculinity thing. Sometimes we talk about racism and stuff on this channel a few times. Mm-hmm. And we talk about like, if you're a person, if I'm a white male and I recognize racism and stuff and I try to change, it's something that you have to constantly work on. And I feel that way about like homophobia and toxic masculinity. Like for me, I struggle with homophobia where I see something and I'm just like, look at this friggin' whatever. And then I'm like, oh, Fian, not supposed to be thinking like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, like, I don't cry, for example. My wife is like, how come you never cry? I'm like, well, I cry in my sleep. That's the one place I cry. And she's like, that's not healthy. And I'm like, well, I can't control that. Or another example is like, I don't coddle kids. I don't coddle anyone. Even my wife, sometimes she'd be like crying and or like she feel a certain way. And I have no clue how to help her because I've never been coddled my entire life. Yeah. For me, it's always like suck it up or get over it or figure it out. So whenever somebody else is going through stuff, I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I just leave or I just like look at them like, and I'm like, look at them like they're stupid. Like, I don't know what to do because I never had anybody show me how you're supposed to be when somebody else is in pain.
Yep. I feel that.
That is something I can heavily relate with. I would say, I have to say, my mom, I find her to be like an angel, and she's someone that big inspiration in my life, someone that sort of at least helped me understand it's okay to have sort of like a sensitive, emotional side to you. Yeah. I think I told you this before, like for my wedding with Amy, I cried like a little bitch. Like, boy, did I cry. And till this day, I'm still suffering from like people constantly making fun of me that I cry for my wedding, which is like, it blows my mind. It's a wedding, it's a very emotional day.
Yep.
You cry. And then it became like a thing. So then when I had my daughter, I had it in my mind. So when I saw Maya for the first time, I didn't cry. I was like, very proud. I was like, no, daddy ain't gonna cry for you. Daddy is but I think it's also aging. As you get older, you become so much more comfortable with things. Certain things just feel so trivial.
Yeah.
Being a manager of people that are very young, sometimes I'm surprised of the stuff that when we were like 20, 18, like we used to stress and worry about. It's like, bro, that you're gonna get to a point in your life that this is just gonna be a shitty memory. Mm-hmm. You won't even think about it, like blah blah. So like, just it's fine. It's just be true to yourself and be happy, and as long as you're not an asshole type person and you bring pain to someone else, you'll be fine.
True that. That was a good. This was a good podcast, man. It's always good to have a guest on that's knowledgeable and knows what they're doing. It's just always been a hit for us. Never a miss. I really appreciate you being here, spending your time with us.
Wait, we're not done, are we? Because I still have more things I want to ask.
Okay, then go ahead. I was about to.
All right.
Now I was just gonna add thank you, and obviously I will do my best to be a more sort of involved friend. I am actually one of your I'm here, one of your Twitch Prime subs, so if that counts for anything.
Where, for me?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm not even... okay.
Yeah, you might have to start duo streaming or something.
I guess so.
I don't think I've ever seen your stream, because I don't think I've ever found it. Yeah. But I remember a while back, I subbed, and then it came a reminder because I had to check my Twitch, because I think it was subbed to somebody I didn't know. Mm. I think I paid this person like the $5 sub for like 2 years. I was pissed. So then I took it out. And then I had all this, because for some reason I had all this money queued up to my Twitch from some Amazon gift card that I got a while back. Mm. And then I subbed to you and someone else.
Okay, cool.
Nice. So this question now. Okay, so I really hope nobody from the professional world is watching this.
Oh my God.
This question is going to... We might have to just cut this out. If you're not watching this live... You're not going to hear this question. So a question for both of y'all.
Wait, so we're cutting this from audio and video?
Just anything after this. So as soon as I start saying the question, it's just going to cut. So wait, let me just say my goodbyes then, because y'all ain't going to see this. It was nice having you on the show, as always. It was nice shit talking with you and cracking jokes. And of course... One thing I always like about Babel, especially back when we back in the day, you remember UVI days when we first started, when I first started, when I changed my belief system. We used to be debating and all these kind of stuff. And one thing I could say, he's a very thoughtful guy. I learned a lot from Babel back then too. Like, I don't know. I always used to look up to him. So I really appreciate that he's basically still the same person. He hasn't allowed the corporate world to change him, make him into a pompous douche or anything. So it was nice having him on the show, and it would be great to have him back again. Maybe for one of these days, we want to have kind of like everybody on the show and kind of have like a 10-person like discussion kind of thing. So maybe one day we could have that, and it would be nice to have you back on for that or for another show in general. So, yeah. All right. Peace, guys. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, hit that notification button, and peace. Yeah, I think that's the end of the show officially. Again, thanks for coming on. I'm actually going to try and watch Zach and Mary make a porno right now if I can, because memories. But anything else you guys want to say?
I already gave my thanks to people for coming and the audience for listening. Like, comment, subscribe, you know, all that jazz. Any closing words, people?
Well, thank you for having me. This has been fun. It has been the highlight of my week. This is awesome. I will try as a friend to stay more connected. Whoever sees this, any interest in anything that I mentioned from the professional side, just visit the website acceleratebi.com. You'll get all the info that you need to know.
Cool.
Thank you guys again.
No problem, man. Peace.
Peace.